You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. In your backyard. And worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband, let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main expanding countries are the United States, China and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePray and you get a whole service just on a...
How does it go?
IE7, you were having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
Well, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm your host, Andrew McComb. There's never a week that goes by in the technological world without one of the major players making somewhat of a ruckus. And of course, this time, it's Telstra's turn. Last week, the High Court of Australia ruled against Telstra when it claimed that the ACCC's ability to set network access fees to its rivals was unconstitutional. In their challenge, Telstra targeted Clause 51 of the Australian Constitution, which guarantees just compensation when property is compulsorily acquired. Naturally, they believed they were being forced to sell access to its line-sharing product below its cost. Telstra claimed the ACCC's price-cutting intervention breached the Constitution because it amounted to the acquisition of Telstra shareholders' property without just compensation. However, the High Court unanimously ruled that the telecommunications access regime set out in the Trade Practices Act did not amount to any acquisition of Telstra's property. So, like it or lump it, Telstra now has to provide their competitors access to parts of their infrastructure from $3.20 per month. So now what? Having earned the reputation for being vindictive, surely this won't just pass over without a PR spray from one of those three amigos. From one of Australia's largest companies to one of the world's largest companies, Microsoft have been making waves with the launch of Server 2008. But as for Bill Gates, the founder of the world's largest software company, his position on the world's rich list has taken a fall. He now resides, ever so comfortably, as the world's third richest man, having spent 13 years at the top. US financier Warren Buffett and Mexican telco mogul Carlos Slim Helú overtaking the world's richest nerd.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Microsoft launched IE8 Beta. Telstra seeks indemnity on the network. Google removes maps at the Pentagon's asking. Adam Turner turns his attention to journalistic plagiarism in the IT media. And Microsoft take the knife to Vista pricing. First up, though, here's the latest happenings from the Tech Talk Radio news desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Telstra loses court battle over tech sharing. Passwords no longer needed for Windows XP. New .asia domain name registrations are now underway. Australia engages allies in cyber warfare. And an Australian technology enthusiast implants RFID chip in forearm. Welcome to Tech Talk News. In a unanimous ruling by the High Court of Australia, Telstra has lost its case in which it argued it was being unfairly treated by being forced to share equipment and parts of its network with competitors. Telstra took action against both the federal government and the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission and argued that providing competitors access to its equipment amounted to an acquisition of its property. Telstra said that this acquisition had to be on just terms as stipulated in the Australian Constitution. The case was dismissed with a court ruling which stipulated that the access regime set out in the Trade Practices Act did not mean that Telstra's property was actually being acquired. ACCC Chairman Graham Samuel welcomed the High Court's ruling and said it was a significant one which will remove uncertainty in the industry. Mr. Samuel said that the decision made it absolutely clear that the Trade Practices Act, and specifically its application to the unbundled local loop, is constitutionally valid. In another damaging week for software giant Microsoft, a New Zealand security consultant has released a tool that can unlock Windows computers in seconds without the need for a password. Adam Boileau first demonstrated the hack for Microsoft's Windows XP operating system at a security conference in Sydney in 2006, but released it publicly last week after Microsoft had failed to provide a fix after 2 years. Boileau said the tool could be used to unlock locked Windows machines or to log on without a password by connecting a Linux-based machine via FireWire and running a simple command. The target machine is then tricked into allowing the attacking computer to have read-write access to its memory. The tool can then modify the Windows password protection code and render it ineffective. While many older desktop computers are not equipped with FireWire ports, many recent models are equipped, including many laptops manufactured in the last few years. According to The Age Tech, Microsoft was unavailable for comment last week about the new FireWire utility. This potentially damaging news for Microsoft comes after a steady run of adverse publicity in recent weeks. In January, the European Commission, which regulates competition for the European Union, announced a brand new antitrust investigation against Microsoft. In February, Microsoft shares fell 15% after an unsuccessful bid to buy internet search giant Yahoo. Then, last week, Microsoft's co-founder Bill Gates was overtaken by Warren Buffett as the world's richest man, according to the annual billionaires list released by Forbes. Businesses in the Asia-Pacific region can now for the first time register domains with a new .asia suffix. The .asia organization, which is managing the land rush of the new top-level domain, reported nearly 267,000 applications on the first day of registrations on the 20th of February. Businesses have until the 12th of March to register their .asia domain name preference before applications close. The land rush period is designed so that domain names can be auctioned in the event that more than one organization bids on a single domain name. 2 years ago, the international body responsible for the regulation of domain names, ICANN, approved the .asia registry agreement, which cleared the way for .asia domain registrations. Now, internet domain names with the .asia suffix can be used to supplement country domains like .jp for Japan and .cn for China. CyberStorm 2 was officially launched by the Attorney General in Canberra last week. The digital security exercise involves Australia, the United States, Canada, the United Kingdom and New Zealand, in which all countries engage in an international hacking exercise. The electronic war game is a follow-up to last year's CyberStorm and is designed to test the integrity of national security between the five nations. Australia's Attorney General, the Honourable Robert McClelland MP, joined UK Deputy High Commissioner Tim Gurney and Australian Federal Police Commissioner Mick Keelty to launch the event in Canberra last week. The exercise will run for 3 days from the 11th of March. And Jonathan Oxer, Director of Internet Vision Technology, has implanted an identification chip in his arm, which can be used to lock and unlock his front door. The chip is the size of a grain of rice and is implanted in Mr. Oxer's forearm. It was obtained from a supplier which provides the technology to veterinary surgeons for identifying domestic pets. Mr. Oxer spoke on Melbourne Radio last week about the identification chip.
It acts as an identification device that can be read from a very short distance by a suitable lock or something like that. And the door itself has an electrically triggered lock. So what I can do is walk up to my door, wave my arm in front of the reader, and the door simply unlocks. So I don't need to use keys or anything like that.
Mr. Oxer said his next project is to modify bathroom scales to provide Bluetooth connectivity. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Microsoft, big news this week. Server 2008 is rolling out nationally and internationally for that matter.
Let's stick to the cricket, not to the outbound telemarketing.
Okay, good. So. Yes, the company blamed the outage on erroneous routing information.
It's got to be a lot faster than most internet connections at the moment.
Well, unfortunately, that day has come to an end.
Well, they're not going to want to do it, are they?
Well, this is vital infrastructure in our country.
Mm. And someone kind of needs to take it on as their pet project. I'll demonstrate later on.
He came round to my place and he did it in 5 seconds flat.
Well, the industry had a few goes at it years ago, and I think that sort of tainted the market for a long time.
How do I do this, and where do I find this? And, you know, that type of thing seems to be happening now with social media.
Why would you do that?
It's a matter of re-educating yourself, getting the string of words to get your 4922 answer out the other end. You can say yes in many ways. You can say yes, yep. Yeah, thanks for that. Fell right into that.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb here at the panel with a cacophony of panelists this evening. One fairly elusive chap who's had to reintroduce himself, but nonetheless he's managed to stagger in the door, not before time too. Dr. Ron, the virtual Dr. Ron, or the real Dr. Ron?
No, this is the real one here. I did have to check the street directory just to make sure I knew where the studio was, but I'm back. It's good to be back.
It's lovely having you back.
Thank you.
Have so much pent-up technological frustrations you've been meaning to vent, and you haven't had the opportunity here on the show.
That's right. That's right. Now, I'm looking forward to this evening. I've been listening to the last few episodes, and it's been very interesting. Jason Sterling last week was great.
Oh, he's good, wasn't he?
From Genesis.
And he's, I've been dealing with him on the email during the course of the week. He's come back with some more suggestions. He sent a email for the website that I think we spoke about last week as well.
Good on him.
Drag out very shortly.
Did you ask him about why he didn't give me the job in, when was that, 2002 or something? I had an interview with him.
Doctor Who? Sorry.
It's very good. Yes, small world, small industry, but that was very good.
Yes. Anyway, a big thanks to the man sitting to camera left or your right-hand side. The reason why I say camera left is because the webcam's on tonight. You can actually go and see the boys.
Oh, there it is. It needs a little red light on it so we know that we're under surveillance.
Yes, okay. Unfortunately, Graham's around the right-hand side of the CD stack, so you can't quite see him over there, but there's a finger there, but hey, you've got to be in that 30-second envelope. Meanwhile, Dr. Ron and JD are seeing their primary video, and here's me waving. Maybe you might see that too. You're seeing my shoulder beautifully, but anyway. Yes, thank you very much for JD on camera left there for coming in and filling in for the times where Dr. Ron just couldn't quite manage to find the car keys, I guess.
And I found the place again, so it's
It's good. It's good. We'll move you up the schedule on the who's who on the Tech Talk Radio list. Although there is a vicious...
Nothing like some healthy competition.
No, exactly right. There is a vicious rumour you're on holiday shortly. I don't know whether that'll make any difference or not. But
I don't. No, the rumour is true. I am on holidays. I've got 2 weeks of holidays coming up after tonight, so I should be right for the next 2 weeks.
Oh, that's terrific.
Fingers crossed.
Hopefully you need a break. Sounds like you do.
I feel like I do, yes.
And Graham, thank you. Attendee type sort of person who, when all this fails, Graham is here, which is fantastic.
Yeah, usually rocks up every week.
No, you're doing, Andrew. Absolutely. I'm doing well, actually. Technology did fail us, like, just to, you know, because this is what it's all about. Tried ringing Dr. Ronald day today saying, hey, you're coming along, because he put out the option tonight, sort of. The betting was fairly good in favour of turning up, and of course, right through to the end, he wouldn't answer his phone until he walked in the door here.
I gave you the 99% would be here option, and said, yeah, 1% chance
won't be. We've heard that one before, though,
yeah,
Dr. Ron.
I've given higher odds than that, too, when I haven't turned up. But unfortunately, we have this strange situation where you've tried to call me a dozen times, Andrew, and I just wasn't receiving any phone calls on my mobile phone, but I was making calls all afternoon, and I've turned the phone off, turned it on again, and it goes beep, 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 beep. All these messages start pouring in.
But that's very unusual problem.
It's very strange.
Yeah. Anyway, you hear, that's the main thing. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is the email address for us. Now, I've been changing everything around in the mail server side of things just because of the spamming issues and things. So give us an email if you're there. What are you boys are playing games
Nothing.
On your laptops, are you over there?
No, face the front. It's all correct. We're just having a look at the webcam page.
Oh, is that what you're
quite
going?
Amusing, isn't it?
Glad to see that. Yes, you can see the webcam popping up there. Sorry, I'm absolutely distracted now, but nonetheless.
Try the spam. You've been fine-tuning the spam.
Yes, I've changed mail server. So everyone, give us a shot. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. Have a look at the webcam. It's a big picture there tonight. Mini disc is in the forefront there. I'll just move that a bit. But feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. And hello to everybody listening on the streams. I just saw Jeff Dudley calling in there before saying he's listening to us on both.
Excellent.
Have the left track in one ear and the right track in the other. So what if there's delay?
They wouldn't be synchronized. That would be dreadful.
That would be really bad. So we go for Windows, we go for Shoutcast.
Absolutely.
Very
fantastic.
Good.
So welcome wherever you might happen to be listening anywhere in the world. Mr. Gates.
He couldn't be here tonight.
No, he couldn't be here. There's another story, actually.
Our long-time listener, Jeff Gates, we're talking about?
No, Bill.
Bill. Oh, the other one.
Bill, he's...
The other Gates. Yeah.
That's right. Warren Buffett and Carlos Slim have pushed him from the top billings of the world's most comfortably well-off. So he's number three on the list, just short of several Indians and some Russians. So obviously Enterprise is working really well in some other countries at the moment for the rich list, but I must admit, Bill is into philanthropy in a fairly substantial sort of way, so
he gave it all away.
Hoping that is the case, and well done, Bill, if that's the case. He's obviously still got a fair bit left at age 52,
No, I don't think he's looking at social welfare just yet.
No. 52. No. His net worth is $58 billion.
Good on him.
Yeah. $2 billion short of the Mexican tycoon. And way short of the Warren Buffett. Anyway, can't see Sol Trujillo here anywhere. I've had a look. He's not there.
Oh,
he's working on his way up, though, I'm sure.
He was the Mexican buffoon. That's somebody else, is it?
No, it's Carlos. Not unless he's got an alias.
Oh.
Mm. Anyway, we should just... yes. Anyway. as you mentioned, Dr. Ron, in the news, Telstra has lost the ACCC court case.
Bye-bye.
Big news, big news. Vindictive, bitter and twisted are two words that, well, it's three actually, come to mind. But nonetheless, the High Court of Australia basically said, nah, the ACCC does have the right to set the charges that the network has to provide services.
Well, they were complaining that they were being forced to share their network equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And parts of their network with their competitors.
Yep.
And they said that this is not fair, this amounts to an acquisition of our property. And it's unconstitutional.
Absolutely not. I've got a 5-year-old, a 2-year-old, and there's nothing further from the truth. It's not an acquisition of property. It's called sharing.
It's called sharing. It's called playing nice.
That's right.
Yes. And it helps when there's legislation to back it up, according to the findings as well.
Yes. Well, yes. Yes, they were quite... They went in with all their guns blazing, as you would expect an organisation of that calibre to do. Section 51 is what they targeted. The federal government can only compulsorily acquire property. But no, they can't. They can acquire technology as it's been sort of set out. So
I don't think anybody can overrule this precedent. I don't think you can get much higher than the High Court.
It's constitutional, isn't it?
Well, it was they were talking about the Constitution and the definition of on just terms and whether or not the property was actually being acquired. And the High Court said, no, it's not an acquisition of your property by actually just using it.
So. No, it's sharing. It's sharing. Anyway. Now, tell me about this guy in the news, Dr. Ryan. The guy's had a thing implanted in his arm so
he's
that
done
he can open
well.
The door when
he's
he comes home.
Wasn't
really?
That funny? That was a great little story. I heard that on commercial radio here one morning, not so long, a couple of days ago.
Adam Turner's just sent us an email saying, what's he going to do when a mugger chops his arm off?
Yes.
So he can come and nick his telly.
Yeah, arm robbery is what that is. No. he's done very well. Mr. Oxa is his name, and he's got a little RFID chip, the same sort of chip that you have implanted in your pet dog or your pet cat.
Yeah.
And you can run a little scanner over it, and you can pull out a number.
Probably good if you're suffering from Alzheimer's or something. You just pop into Safeways and get yourself scanned across the thing, and they can tell you who you are and where you live.
Yeah, that's the idea.
Mm.
So it's a sign of the size of a grain of rice.
It's got to hurt, I would have thought, having something... Well, I don't know. You see it in movies, don't you?
I don't know. What's the medical term, Joe? You know this, for something just under the skin.
Subcutaneous?
There we go. So it's a subcutaneous implant.
Mm. Oh, well.
Don't really hurt.
How good's that, though? That's great, isn't it?
Something that doesn't come out.
Well, I don't think that it would. Can't see that it would come
but
out.
But it's the same sort of thing they do to puppy dogs and pussycats, is it?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly the same
sort
technology.
Of numb him up and slip it in under the skin.
That's right. No, it doesn't do them any harm at all, Graham. Right. I reckon it's a terrific idea. He can just wave his forearm in front of the reader at his front door and the door goes click and lets him in.
Yeah, there was a story a couple of weeks ago about the smart pet door, wasn't there, with the similar
technology? Yes, we had that as a, what was it, gadget of the week?
So his wife, so his wife could program the house that he can't come in at, you know, dinner time, for example.
Hey, now there's a thought, isn't there? So he could work with kids.
He could be digitally,
a business plan here.
Digitally locked out of his own house.
That's the one. If he, so the door won't open between 2 a.m. and 6 a.m. or something.
Yeah, you'd be home by midnight or 2 a.m. or you're not coming in. Crikey.
Curfew. That's the life.
Yes, yes. It could also be used to talk to mobile phone devices and tell your wife where people are. And who knows? You know, there's a great... You could have small electrical charges released if you're not home in time. Where is he? Push the button.
Yeah. you're gonna get one, Graham, you're saying.
Well, I said I thought it was a really good idea.
Until just then.
You know, with friends like us, who needs enemies, huh?
Mm. I reckon it's a great idea. He's also developed a little device which unlocks his Windows workstation when he waves his arm near his computer screen.
Oh, okay.
So he doesn't have to type in a password.
That's a good idea, I suppose, except that the problem with that is that the day that the thing breaks, and because you haven't typed it for the last 3 years, that you'd forgotten your password. Yeah.
So it wouldn't be exclusive, so when the technician came to fix it, they'd be able to log in without him being there?
Well, I think so. I think you'd still be able to use the keyboard.
Okay.
But just him waving his arm there is sufficient to unlock it as well.
Yeah. All right.
Like the fingerprint readers work. along those lines as well in a lot of notebooks these days.
That's right. So you can still use the password if you type it in.
Yeah,
you can just
you can swipe your finger across the reader. Yeah.
Nice.
Biometrics in a different sort of way. Let's just get back to telecommunications for a second. Another thing in the news this week is Mr. Conroy was pressured to scrap Opel's funds, Opel being the consortium that has been otherwise, whether legitimately or illegitimately, given the role to roll out broadband in the country outside the city areas here in Australia.
Yep. So they're going to deploy a WiMAX network in the regional areas.
Yes, exactly. This letter was sent on February the 12th, 6 days after Telstra boss Sol Trujillo and Kevin Rudd held a joint press conference announcing that ADSL2 upgrade, remember? So everything was all, you know, swimmingly, you know, roses not so long back, and all of a sudden we've had Telstra now in front of the High Court saying, nah, you can't do that, and now we've got Conroy being pressured to scrap the Opel funds. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting times again. We never knew. We didn't think it would be clean sailing here when Mr. Conroy took control of the communication side for the country, but this is sort of really turning into be quite a furor. And then add this to the mix as well. Telstra is now seeking indemnity on its network because they've had to present their, or I don't know whether they've been forced to or what, but we spoke about it briefly last week. Their network information about where everything lives and how it all works has to be presented to the competition. So
I heard
that
they talking
can do this
about that.
To the notes.
That was in an episode a couple of weeks ago.
It's really, I don't know, what's going on? Conroy is...
Who did you go in favour of with that decision?
I was very much in Telstra's favour. I don't see why they should have to present...
Although, reading some of the other articles, Ross Kelso's come out saying that, in fact, the network's probably ready for fibre to the node now.
Yeah, but I don't think that's the reason for why they would have to present it. But I agree with you.
Other than they say, yes, you give us another $22 billion and we'll do it, but they've actually already got it there, for example.
But is that the reason? I wouldn't have thought so, but
I'd have to side with you, Andrew.
Yeah,
I
you can only
to that. I thought, well, why do they need to disclose all that information? There are network boundary points and there are points of interface between the Telstra network and other people's networks and customer equipment, and there's no need really, apart from providing compatible open standard sort of access points and interface points, there's no need for them to be disclosing what's inside their network.
Especially to someone like Optus or Singtel, the Singaporean-based telco, which is probably the second largest incumbent in our part of the world anyway.
Even if you're going to be putting equipment inside their exchange buildings and connecting to their network, they're going to have to provide you with interconnect information, but not all the gutsy, juicy details of software levels that they're running and equipment and things like that.
Well, if you think about a terrorism plot, and let's face it, it is a reality in this day and age, if someone got hold of the blueprints of the communications network, and let's face it, leaks happen, regardless of how good your security is. You know, something will get let somewhere, even if it's like, something gets sent in the internal mail and ends up in a FedEx courier and they lose it or whatever. Because I think that happened overseas in the American tax office system where they had a lot of tax records get out. Genuine mistake.
Look what happened in the United Kingdom with those all those records.
That might have been
all those records.
Actually.
Yeah, that was probably disappeared via FedEx.
Yeah, that was it. Probably 12 months back. Mm. But genuine little mistakes can happen like that once it's been put into a document type sort of format.
Yeah.
So I just think it's a bit of a worry. But anyway, your point was very valid, JD. Potentially Telstra already have the technology in there.
And it suggested that maybe for the last decade even.
Yeah. Yeah, which makes you wonder about really their motivation between the three amigos. Certainly they're very upfront in saying that it's a shareholder's return, but at what cost is the shareholder's return? If you asked a lot of shareholders to say, come on, let's get this show running, I bet you they'd be saying, roll out the fibre, roll out the technology so that Australia can progress. So, I don't know, maybe there's other things working here. Anyway, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Andrew McComb. Dr. Ron makes a wonderful return to the studio this evening, Graham Callaghan and Justin Dunlop in. We had some emails during the course of the week. One particular email, which I'm about to dig up here from Jack, who sent it across just today, I think, says, I've been listening to your show for about the last 18 months and continue to find it informative. Thank you, Jack.
G'day, Jack.
However, as a suggestion to broaden the program's appeal, why not talk about Linux? Sounds like two of the panellists run Linux, so an occasional segment to educate listeners like me would be welcome. With the Vista debacle, we XP users could go out and buy an expensive Mac, but Linux is free. It runs on a PC and has programs that do most things that people need. Very valid point, you Linux people over there. Yeah. I've been looking at Dr. Ron and and Graham in the corner there.
And also JD.
Well, in fact, I run Yellow Dog Linux on an Apple machine, so...
Sorry, Yellow Dog, two dogs.
Two dogs, Yellow Dog, yes.
Well, there you go, there's three Linux people. So, do tell me, you know, we won't go into great detail at the moment, but how simple is it to get a Linux box up and running something like a word processor on it, or surfing the net?
It's as easy as installing Windows on a machine, really, these days. You can download a DVD-ROM image from a major a distributor packager like Fedora or Yellow Dog or Ubuntu.
All free, isn't it?
Those ones are, yes. There are ones that get that are charged for as well, but the ones we're talking about are free, and in particular, Dr. Run's running Ubuntu as an actual workstation. The Linux that I use, I run for servers, but I use Windows as the workstation. But you don't have to do it that way, and these days you can do everything, almost everything that you want to do on your normal home PC using Linux. You just download the Ubuntu DVD or CDs from the website. You burn them to CD. You take a PC that you're happy to lose all the information on. You want to rebuild it as a new machine, and you can put the disk in, boot from it, and it steps you through. Click next, go and answer the questions, go through the installation process.
Now Dr. Ron's been quite...
Anyone who can use a computer could do it.
Yeah, good. That's really important. Dr. Ron's been a fan of using old decrepit something that Windows XP wouldn't even load on. Is that still the case? You can use your really old machine, or is it worth giving it a bit of pizzazz, a bit of grunt?
These days, it is worth giving it a decent machine. On the machines I run as servers, you know, if you're someone like me who's doing it at a technical level and you want to run a mail server or you want to run a web server, something like the forums running on, you can afford to run that on an older generation machine because you don't need a graphical user interface,
with a mouse and
a pointer and all that. Well, that's a big part of it. Yeah, that's what chews up a lot of resources on modern machines. Is making that look really flashy and to make it fast and responsive. So I'm running the forum is running on a modern distribution of Linux, but on a slightly older. I think it's a Pentium. It's a Pentium 3. I think I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It's not.
So any old machine a couple of years old is probably fine to load up the latest release of Linux.
But if you're wanting to run a desktop and you're wanting to edit Word documents and instant message with your friends and read all your emails and do all that stuff.
Is that really seamless, like it is through a Windows desktop? Or
absolutely.
For that matter?
Absolutely, without a doubt. OpenOffice.org is the program that sort of tips the balance, really. And that lets you open your Word documents, open your Excel spreadsheets, just as you would on a Windows machine. There's very little that doesn't work. The only thing that doesn't work is the VBA scripts that, if you're doing something very fancy with a Excel spreadsheet or something like that, but the basic stuff, all the formulas in Excel and all that stuff work flawlessly.
There's probably three applications that I use in the Microsoft Windows world that I think are the best tools for the job, and I'm maintaining a Windows workstation in my office so that I can run those three applications. But that's all I use on the Windows machine. And those three applications are for audio editing and graphics editing and website design. But for all my other applications, for email, as Graham said, web browsing, instant messaging, FTPing, Google Earth, all sorts of stuff, it's all running on the Ubuntu desktop. It runs very well.
And I guess the key for people that are thinking about switching or trying it is to, if your hardware is standard, so you've got a Compaq or a Hewlett-Packard machine, for example, it's much more likely it'll install cleanly without any hiccups because so many people use those standard platforms, dare I say even a Dell machine. But if you've got something that's been built by, your mate around the corner or you've put it together yourself, well, you just need to wear the consequences. The drivers for your particular video card or sound card may not quite be up to scratch yet. But if you get something off the shelf, it usually works pretty well.
Which is the same situation you'd have, JD, on a Windows machine.
That's right.
If you had a bit of a Frankenstein system.
Adam Turner should be in the studio with us tonight because he's here in spirit on the email, and he'll be coming up after the break with the view from the couch. But he says... It's fine if everything works straight away, but if you have a problem, such as hardware and drivers, etc., it can be a lot of mucking around. Best system is hardware and software designed for each other, equals Mac.
Mac.
Oh, he
thank you very much.
He has converted, hasn't he?
He has turned, hasn't he?
Look, the thing about that, though, is that if you do have a problem, you don't have a support, big company support.
It's not as if you ring Microsoft or that's Apple on their help lines, is it?
No, you can't. But on the other hand, there's a massive community of users, and the whole thing is I mean, it's not just supported by the users, it's written and created by a community group. So it's really easy to get onto the, you know, if you've got a problem with OpenOffice.org and it's not opening your Word documents or it's doing something odd.
Like I did yesterday.
You can get onto the forum where the actual developers who wrote the thing also hang out and find out what's going on and let them know about the problem if they don't already know about it. If it's a known problem, you can find out what the status of the fix is, and they'll probably find that someone's already working on fixing it.
Mm. And in fact, you can get commercial support for some of the more mainstream versions of Linux.
Oh, absolutely.
As well,
so.
I would have thought that if you stuck to well-known manufacturers, even if you did build your own machine, you know, rather than, and well-known video cards and sound cards, because all the sound cards seem to be built into motherboards these days, and the video cards are really in the realms of the gamers if you're buying something sort of high spec and potentially not have a driver for Linux. Would that be right?
Yeah. Any hardware that's reasonably popular is going to be, you know, very well supported because someone will have had one and have found a way to make it work. It's only when you get to slightly obscure stuff or absolutely bleeding edge new stuff that sometimes you might have trouble.
Mm-hmm. Very good. All right, so there you go. There's a little bit about Linux. We should probably do some more about that in the course of time, considering
people
have asked. So maybe we'll put our brains together and come up with something informative in the next few weeks.
And if you've got any specific questions, you know, about Linux or any of the specific distributions, like if you're running Ubuntu or something like that, if you've got a question you want answered, or if you know got something that you're not sure about, let us know through the feedback line or on the forum or something like that, and we'll address it. We'll give you an answer.
Thanks, Jack. Jack did exactly that. He sent us an email to feedback@techtalkradio.com.au asking for it, and there you go. We have delivered. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Adam Turner's going to jump up onto the sofa and have a bit of a look from up there, and I think this week we're going to be talking about things like plagiarism, media, and the IT industry, just for a change.
Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today's a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October, 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
Caring.
I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage? What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus had, again, had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPod.
Betty's got one.
Yeah.
I wonder what she listens to.
She'll probably listen to us.
An unexpectedly high number of voters want the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
Ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking to the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
You put the date on E-Pray, and you get a whole service. Just on the, how does it go? It goes...
Insightful, entertaining, and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
Jeff Dudley has just sent us an email saying, did anyone else have problems with servers on February the 29th? Well, I can't remember on February the 29th, but we certainly had one locally. Well, when I say locally, between Victoria and New South Wales.
That was the day...
2 days ago or so, wasn't it? 2 or 3 days ago, which I'm trying to get the date. What do we live with? Probably last week, about Friday, about the 7th.
That was the day the internet disappeared.
It was. It disappeared for many Australians. for 8 hours. People blamed the incumbent, and they're probably right, because it was traced down to a card which someone, I don't know. But anyway, that's the only thing we know of in internet outages that have given everybody a bit of grief, because this was down for 8 hours, right through the course of the day. Couldn't get mail at the office or anything like that.
My phone worked on that day. Because you rang me and said, have you got internet access?
No, I didn't actually. I texted you instead.
So oh, that's right. There you go. Yeah.
But funnily enough, only two of my three servers were not talking. Actually, no. One of my servers was not talking. The other two were talking just fine. So it just goes to show you've just got to be lucky in the path of how things connect these days. So. Anyway, that was it. So, all right, let's talk a little bit about plagiarism. It's oh so easy to do in this day of modern technology, especially whether you're either a university student who likes cutting and pasting off articles on the internet for your assignments or study projects and things like that, or whether it comes to media. And let's face it, we're all probably a little bit guilty of it here from time to time, especially when you're in a hurry for a non-profit show such as ours. So, but yes, Adam Turner jumped on the couch this week, and there's been a fair bit of talk in the industry about plagiarism of late.
Is Adam a bit revved up, is he, about this?
Oh, look, yes. Yes, if he had, you know, he'd be throwing remotes off the couch, I think. So here's this week's installment of The View from the Couch.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
Australia's IT journalism community aired some of its dirty laundry last week when one of the biggest names in the business was accused of serial plagiarism on the ABC's Media Watch. Media Watch host Jonathan Holmes dedicated the bulk of the program to analysing the habits of journalist, publisher and industry legend David Richards, owner of Foursquare Media and backer of publications such as Smart House News. The events came as little surprise to the rest of Australia's technology journalists, some of whom have accused Richards of ripping off their work for many years. Several journalists worked with Media Watch to bring their concerns to light. You can steal another journalist's drink, you can steal his wallet or even his wife, but stealing someone else's story is the unforgivable sin amongst the journalism community. Richards is no stranger to controversy. He was once one of the country's most daring investigative journalists, putting his life at risk in the 1980s to uncover union corruption. Richards often rode shotgun with the police, a pistol strapped to his ankle, and his fearless reporting led to the establishment of the Painters and Dockers Royal Commission. Since those days, Richards has made a lot of money, but very few friends, working in public relations, publishing and journalism. Most Australian IT journalists have had dealings with him, but it's hard to find anyone who has a good word to say about him. Anyway, Media Watch detailed accusations of plagiarism against Richards reaching back 2 years. Stories from the likes of Britain's Telegraph newspaper have appeared almost word for word on Smart House websites under Richards' byline. All up, Media Watch identified 10 David Richards articles with a striking resemblance to articles from foreign websites. Richards has also had ongoing disputes with Australian publishers and journalists. Richards initially claimed to have the right to republish the articles in question, but further investigations by Media Watch found this is not the case. One publisher had terminated its agreement more than a decade ago after, quote, multiple violations by David Richards. Now, this is when David Richards made a startling discovery. Apparently, someone had been hacking into his website and posting other people's stories under his name to discredit him. Even Media Watch had trouble swallowing this, with host Jonathan Holmes creating the Phantom of the Internet trophy, awarded to Richards for the most original explanation for apparent plagiarism. You can read a full transcript of the Media Watch item on the ABC's website. The big question is, after the Media Watch expose, whether Smart House's mystery hacker will stop stealing other people's stories in an effort to discredit Richards. David Richards has never seemed too concerned about the opinion of his peers, but online news site Crikey has revealed that the Media Watch item is already up on YouTube and has been brought to the attention of Richards' major advertisers. The story has also been highlighted on several news sites, such as Crikey. It will be interesting to see if the scorn of readers and advertisers, as well as journalists, will be enough to force Smart House's mystery hacker into retirement.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, watch this space, I guess.
Sometimes when we write the Tech Talk news each week, we, or certainly I do, I use Smart House as a reference
to you
for some news items. They've often got things there that aren't in the mainstream media.
Oh, well, there you go.
So, we'll have to watch that one.
All right. Now, just because, you know, while we all sleep at night and we've heard of war games and things like that across the course of time, there is another show going on the panel over
yes,
here, boys.
Yes, went on this thing. Sorry. Focus.
These things called war games, remember them? They used to go and shoot things in deserts and stuff like that. There's one happening right now as we speak on the internet.
There
did
is.
You know? Yes. In fact, you did know, Dr. Yes. You talked about it in the news. I listened.
Cyberstorm.
It is. It is. Attorney General Robert McClelland announced the federal government's involvement in Cyberstorm recently. It's going to run from 10 days. Sorry, it's going to run for 5 days from March the 10th. I'll get my numerals around the right way. I'm going dyslexic. And will also involve security officials and businesses from the US, UK, Canada and New Zealand. So I guess this is a fairly, you know, all jokes aside, a fairly important aspect to national security. We spoke about it with Telstra revealing their network plans. And here it is sort of in the real world happening now. Someone's trying to hack into maybe the Defence Force's computers as we speak, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Well, they are. There's people from at least four other nations trying desperately to hack into our defence systems.
So what happens
part
if they
the
win?
Exercise?
There must be people sitting there, like, I don't know, I've never been involved in exercises as such, but there'd be people sitting there doing scorecards, I guess, and watching people attack on certain ports and seeing how they can do it. I wonder if they've got the, you know, they've done the ring around and got all the hackers to pop in. I don't know. Like, where would you, and not unless you've got the agencies themselves, which sort of spawn hackers to go and do these sort of things, but naturally,
well, that
for the right reasons, not the wrong reasons.
There was the book and movie of Sneakers, which was all about having a cyber terrorism group that was for sale.
That's, you're showing your age, Mitch. That's going back a few years.
But look, it's
and I'm showing age as well because I remember it.
I remember the name. I don't think I saw the film. Was there a
Robert
film?
Redford, yeah.
Yeah. Wait, was
oh,
it
actually,
Robert Redford?
Yeah, maybe. I have seen the film. Oh, dear. So, yes. But what happens? Like, what machines would they be targeting? Not only would there be telcos and defence and government systems, what other?
Oh, if you're going to make money, it'd have to be banks and insurance agencies and people like that.
Because you could take down a lot of... yeah, well, just, I know you look at the vital infrastructure. A bank would probably be fairly, you know, Commonwealth Bank loses all its cash because someone did something. That would be pretty scary, I would imagine.
And again, there was a Bond film based on that, too.
Really? Maybe I should be a scriptwriter. No, hang on, I've already done that. They've all been done. So, that's e-games. I thought that was really quite interesting. But it's happening right now from March the 10th through till the 15th. So if your ISP goes down, maybe that's got something to do with that.
Maybe someone from Canada or the United States has been successful. Yes, I don't know. They're actually maliciously trying to damage things. I think they're probably trying to find vulnerabilities and report on those.
But that's the way you do things in real world, isn't it? If you just sit there going, wow, doesn't this look pretty? It takes someone who's not so close to it to actually find the way through the side door, doesn't it?
Mm. Yeah, well, that's right. You need an independent
down or something,
view.
You know? Mm.
Need someone who's a little bit removed from the situation to have a look at it, don't you, objectively?
All right. Let's talk a little bit about Microsoft. We've had recently on Tech Talk Radio talking all about, the Telstra Foundation came in recently to tell us what they're doing in respect to preventing childhood or child nasties happening online. Today, Microsoft have announced, well, actually recently, last Friday, actually, the Australian Federal Police will be using specially developed software from Microsoft to combat online child pornography. Now, I think there was a big bust just recently, if I recall. Some guys up north in Queensland, or Worldwide Syndicate, got done yet again. But the
they hear about these every few months, don't they? They seem to keep popping up.
It's just scary at the moment, especially when you've got kids. The tracking system is also, the Microsoft tracking system is also used in Brazil, Canada, Chile, Indonesia, Italy, Romania, Spain, and the United Kingdom. And Microsoft's Child Exploitation Tracking System, which is what it's called, will allow law enforcement agencies in Australia to share and track information relating to online child exploitation and abuse with their counterparts all over the world.
Mm.
So it sounds like a big, like, chat.
It's a big, I'm just looking at some info about it here. It's a big database that all the agencies have got access to. So I suppose they put in details of what they've found or the habits of particular people that they've encountered, and they can match up their activities in other parts of the world and that other agencies might have come across, I suppose.
Damn fine idea, really, isn't it?
It is. It's very good, yeah.
Because when you think of it, technologically, all agencies have some form of technology, but getting them to talk to each other and cross-referencing...
And that's the big problem with enforcement on the internet, is that, the bad guy's going to be in one jurisdiction, his victim's going to be in another jurisdiction. He's using networks in a dozen different jurisdictions in between.
And, yes, offences are committed all the way in between in 12 different locations.
That's right. So keeping everything in a centralised database where the agencies can get the other end of the story of something that they might be looking at locally.
So this is like a collaborative effort, Graeme, which all the law enforcement agencies have access to?
That's what it appears, is that, Microsoft have set up a database, and they're giving access to all the different agencies around the world, including our own Australian Federal Police.
According to News Limited, the FBI estimates that the production and distribution of child abuse images is valued at US $20 billion annually.
Hmm.
That just goes to show the scale of things. So.
Looks like it's. I'm just reading. It's based at the Mounties police in Canada. So,
yeah. Oh. So good on you, Microsoft. We need more initiatives like that. Maybe the Telstra Fund could chip in a couple of grand towards it. Although the bill's got plenty, I'm sure.
No doubt.
Coming in at number three. All right, let's change allegiances here and move across and have a chat to about our friend Mr. Jobs. He's on a winner when it comes to Apple's iTunes Music Store. It's just been named the second largest seller of music in the United States.
Who told him that?
I don't know, independent record companies, maybe?
Not this little black duck.
Are you still so anti, bitter and twisted about 128K audio, are you?
Oh, I really am. It's a good catalogue system, iTunes, but as far as online shopping goes, I think there's
it's very convenient, though.
Much better options.
Very convenient.
It's not very convenient to be forced to upgrade every other week to get features that you can't even use in this country.
I mean,
that is very annoying, I must admit.
Opened the door on this one, Andrew.
Yeah, that's the thing. If I get one more notification, I'm going to throw something at the computer. You can turn them off. I have found
that
out.
I'm still getting updates to be able to download and rent movies. You can't.
I get updates that it tells me it needs to update to the next version, and it downloads 20 or 30 or 50 megabytes of update information, and then it says you need to restart iTunes, and I restart it, and the first thing that happens is I get an update notification, so I have to update it again.
Yep. Yeah, but you're... And I've also had it that it downloads the update and then says, it downloads a 60 meg of update, and then says, this failed verification, and it won't be installed. I've also had it where it downloads and puts up an illegible license agreement to agree to in a font that's not even an English language font.
Yeah, I've seen that as well.
I don't know. I was just going across to the Mac user over here, JD. Have you had any problems like this before?
Well, my machine does regularly tell me I have to update to the latest version, which I've actually already done.
On a Mac?
Yes, it's on a Mac.
Yeah.
Admittedly, it's a 10-year-old Mac.
So it's a platform-independent problem. It's iTunes is the common thread.
I can usually read the license agreement. It is reasonably important to upgrade. I mean, there was a story, we were saying before, you don't have to upgrade. But, of course, if you don't upgrade, then there can be some security holes left behind. So you sometimes don't have an option.
Okay, so there you go. There was a story about iTunes Music retail sakes winning hands down here, and it got turned into
winning hands down. Yes.
An abuse of technology here coming in. But anyway, just to summarise it, yes, they're doing very well. Okay, moving right along. Microsoft, because we like going to and fro all the major manufacturers, we're going to have a go at Microsoft now.
We need to start writing some of these reviews. TikTok Radio reveals that 100% of people surveyed thinks that iTunes is crap, and we won't actually say that we're going
to say four
out of four, but too bad. We're going to start rolling some of these out, I think, soon. Yeah, it'll make about as much sense as anything else. Yeah, go on, Andrew.
Absolutely. Microsoft takes the price to Vista. I mean, Microsoft takes the knife to the Vista price, so you've got me all flummoxed over here. Microsoft Australia has slashed up to 40% off the price of boxed versions of the Vista operating system. Now, does that surprise anyone, considering...
It only costs you an arm and two legs now.
Ultimate Vista, the full version, is $302 cheaper at $449.
You have to pay for Vista.
Oh, no.
Sorry. This explains your machine, Dr. Ron. Don't go there.
No, I've opened the door. You go on.
Yeah. It's in promos, too. Just
it is.
While the academic version received the smallest price cut, $40 to sell at $139. The price changes were effective immediately, according to the big bosses up there in Sydney. Vista was launched with much fanfare on the 30th of June. No, it wasn't. On the 30th of January 2007. And a lot of people, including someone at our office who bought a laptop which had Vista preloaded on it, says, give me XP any day. And someone's saying XP3 service pack. I think it was you, Graeme. I might be wrong here.
I have made comments about Service Pack 3.
Runs faster and it's really good.
Well, that's the rumour I've heard, yeah.
Okay. You haven't tried it yet?
I haven't tried it yet.
Okay. So there you go. If you're interested in getting a cheap copy of Vista... Now's the chance. So they've brought the price down. And I wonder if it is just because of the fact that it wasn't selling. I do like the Mac ad too. where the PC says, I'm rolling back to XP. Remember that one?
Yes.
That's a very classic one.
I mean, have they brought out any new...
They're still turning them out. It's worth going to the Apple website every now and then to see new ones.
There's a few there. Yeah, there's a few goodies there. So, feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. The webcam is running tonight as we speak. Hello, everyone out there watching us on the webcam. Normally does amazing things for our stats on webcam nights. There's a big spike. All the voyeurs like saying, who are these guys? Is it still running? You're all looking at laptop screens.
No, it is.
Oh, good.
It's running well.
Oh, excellent.
Oh, nice photo of your arm there at the minute.
Oh, good.
Your right elbow.
Oh, dear. We're going to take a break. I think it's time for a break. And then when we come back in, we're going to talk about Google pulling some maps.
You're listening,
Dr. Ron?
Yeah, I am listening.
Residual powers. And I've got some residual powers.
You can't turn off the DNA.
In terms of the volume,
over 60 fingerprints. Now,
we may have digressed.
Talk radio.
Bill Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600
donors and things were as good as you're not expecting, even if they do a pretty good
job. Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the panel, including welcome back to the panel. They're just all walking in with their coffees in hand.
Am I on? Have I won anything?
Yeah, that's a bit like
that,
isn't it? Yeah, yes. dear, yes, so we're all out in the other having our coffees for the evening. And it's time to come back on the radio. You're listening to Andrew McComb. Dr. Ron makes a welcome return this evening. Justin Dunlop here and Graham Callaghan, all talking about technology in general. Let's talk a little bit about Google, the world's largest search engine. Apparently, I learned today that they're not that flash in China or Asia and stuff like that.
Google.cn?
Yeah, apparently, I think Yahoo and there's another one. I was just reading it as I was glancing across the papers today.
Micro-who?
I don't think it's them.
Sold them yet, have they?
I don't think it's them. But anyway, Google pulls maps on the request of the Pentagon's request. That's the American... security organisation, I believe. They live in that Pentagon-ish sort of shaped building that a plane landed in not so long back. Google has complied with the request by the Pentagon to remove some online images from its street-level map service because they pose security threats to the US-based military, according to some company officials. So there you go, driving up and seeing some pictures. Have you actually, any of you guys, used Google Maps at street level in the United States?
Not the street-level ones. Well, I had a bit of a look from a novelty perspective, but...
Yes, maybe during the next break I'll show you where Lyd lives in Palo Alto in California.
Can you see your house?
You can actually see in the street and the cars out the front there, and you can see her waving in the window as the Google boys drove past in their little car. No, not quite that level, but it's very much along those lines. So if you
would have loved that.
Well, it happened here in Australia, in Sydney and Melbourne, I believe, over the summer months. Although I've been looking and nothing has come up on Google when you come to see the maps here. And if you want to see the Google Maps in the US, you have to go and log on to maps.com as opposed to, or should I say Google, what is it, maps.google.com rather than maps.com.au, the Australian version, because it won't give you the option in the right-hand section of the computer screen to let you come down to street level. It's very good, though. You can stand in the middle of the Golden Gate Bridge and have a look over the bay and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So. All good fun. So, I wonder, there'll probably be some issues in places like Australia too where people don't want maps to be seen, but they're not there yet, so we're all yet to see it.
With the normal view from Google Maps, they used to have the White House...
De-identified.
Yeah, they did. It was blanked out. But I think fairly recently they've allowed it to actually... be seen from the normal aerial photography.
Yeah, we all know where it is.
They probably
point?
Just track every user that looks at that picture. And
oh, maybe. I'm in a bit of trouble then.
It's a bit of a tourist trap then, I would have thought, because, you know, why wouldn't you go and have a look at the...
Well, off the top of my head, I can't remember what it is that you can see in the aerial photo that you'd think they would worry about, like whether it's communications dishes on the roof or... some
you've
other
something,
equipment.
You're going to lob something that goes bang on a place like that. Then
but it's what you're saying is correct. People know where it is. It's not a
secret.
Not an international secret. No.
It's like the GPS system. It always amazed me when they turned the accuracy on that thing. You know what I mean? Because it used to be accurate to about 100 or 200 metres, if I recall.
Yeah.
And then because of the military, they said, oh, well, it can be accurate down to 10 metres. Well,
they deliberately introduced an error
Yeah, why? Because it's like 200 metres is near enough. I would have thought if you're going to use it for wrong reasons, surely. The only issue to do is, like, you know, if you're driving a cab and you're using a navman or something, you'd be in deep trouble because you would have driven past it. So,
and just to digress a little bit, Justin and myself both have intimate knowledge of a radio network here in Melbourne where before it was actually the GPS system was as accurate as it is, they used to have differential GPS bases. And what they would do is establish what the error was. They'd have a known bases at known locations down to the very, very accurate latitude and longitude, and they would have receivers at those bases, and they'd say, well, based on the GPS system telling us this is where we are at the moment, we know that this is wrong, we know that the error is this, so they would re-engineer the results from all of the units in
which
the
field. Which is good in theory, but it still said I was in the middle of Port Phillip Bay on occasion.
But you were. You were fishing, weren't
well,
that's
you? That's true.
It told everyone you were hard at work.
What's the problem?
Yeah, but this was a differential GPS system, but then they...
So what happened to that? Did they phase that out, did they?
There's a new technology being used.
Right, okay. A newer, bigger and better?
Well, there's a data technology being used now.
Right.
Rather than just a radio transceiver sending a signal.
All right.
Interesting stuff.
Shall I move on? I've got another article here which I'm reticent to read out just based on what happens when I read out the iTunes one before the break, but I'm going to give it a go anyway and
bring
see
it
what
on.
Happens. Internet Explorer 8 beta launched.
Ho-hum.
Right, yes.
Oh, good.
Are they still making web browsers?
Yeah, go on. Yeah, apparently. Microsoft has unveiled a test version of IE8, the next of its web edition of browsers, at Microsoft's online technology conference. They got up and they said, here's the first glimpses of the new IE8, which was the predecessor to IE7, which has been out since October 2006. And I know there's still a lot of people who haven't moved on.
I was going to say, IE7's been out for a while now, yeah.
Yeah, there's still a lot of places that I come around and see IE6 still on things.
Mm.
But Graham was saying before, actually you weren't saying anything, your laptop was doing the talking for you. There's still websites out there that say you've got to be running IE to actually access it. Now,
I've got one
rude,
very annoying one that I deal with, yeah, that...
why don't you say what the domain is and we'll shame them publicly,
yes.
Because I think there's no excuse for that behaviour. I would be saying to them, I need to close my account. I can't see your website.
In this modern day and age, there is no excuse.
No,
even Microsoft now lets you to get 99% of the way through your transactions with Firefox.
I think that's extremely rude.
Yeah, I'd love to name them on air, but I actually can't, unfortunately.
Can I?
You too. No. I'd really appreciate it if you didn't.
Okay, due to contractual obligations.
Due to my work commitments, yes.
Right.
All right. But
which I would like to retain.
Has anyone upgraded to Firefox 3 Beta 3?
No, not since I heard your horror stories.
There wasn't problems.
Was you or Graham? I was listening to one of the shows. I wasn't here. Someone had problems.
I had issues with laptop connectivity, but it came back to being Kaspersky.
It wasn't caused by...
It wasn't browser related.
It wasn't caused by Firefox.
That's the one I was thinking
of. I did try one of the earlier betas of Firefox 3, but haven't gone back to it since.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I haven't tried it yet either. I just know that they're in the final stages. So it looks like we're going to get a round of IE and a round of Firefox simultaneously at the same time, which is going to be just fantastic for web developers. Because we'll all have these new gadgets and new things. I think reading...
Another two platforms to test for.
Yeah, style sheets were the big thing in Firefox 3. They're changing a lot of stuff, which is really good because if anyone writes webs seriously, then they'll know the value and the importance of a style sheet, which generally goes along with those sort of things.
Well, hopefully, with a bit of luck, Internet Explorer 8 and Firefox 3 will start to be a bit more closely compatible.
Mm.
And I think Microsoft said that they were working in that direction.
Because one of the things, as a web developer, I know that what you present for Firefox may not look the same as what you expect it to look like in Internet Explorer.
Yeah, well, that
and
really shouldn't happen.
And as a result, to fix those, we actually have style sheets for each browser.
Yep, and then you have to do browser sniffing, and you have to work out what browser they're running. And it's not quite the right way to do things. So.
Yeah. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Full contingency tonight. All we need is Adam Turner here, but he's here on the email on the computer on the laptop next to me.
Oh, yes.
Something just came in there before. But anyway, the webcam is running this evening. Darren is sending lots of emails at the moment. Hello, Darren in Manila.
Daz, how are you?
Let me just scroll up and see. Google Apps Team Edition is great. We are using it at our school. This is in Manila. Just started with Google Sites with students. Great for basic websites. Fantastic. Lots of embedded features. Webcam pic seems static. Yeah, because the boys aren't moving.
Move the camera.
They're all hiding behind their microphones last time I looked at it, so we'll move the camera a little bit and all that sort of stuff.
But it is just a static picture that updates every
30 seconds. Anyway, we'll go and move the camera for you and be back with more after this. If you reckon this is good or bad, there's a bit of a fracas going on over the other side of the panel here this evening.
But I don't have a last name.
The burning mobile phone stuck to his chest.
Their network is more expensive, but it's everywhere.
How does that compare with WiMAX?
Well, you're paying upstream bandwidth. Oh. You have to anyway.
And of course, that caused all kinds of unrest throughout the internet.
Got out of bed at 3 in the morning last week.
If only he'd used his powers for niceness
instead of evil.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron, whose phone is not working? Oh, it's working.
No, it's working. It's all good.
Good.
Yeah.
Thank you, everyone, who's sending feedback emails in hot and... Yes, there's a lot coming in this evening. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. Wherever you happen to be listening to us, all around this lovely bluish, greenish sort of planet thing. I was reading with interest in The Age, which is the Melbourne newspaper today, that... video gamers are really causing a huge problem when it comes to the global footprint, so much so that you know, the world's aviation apparently is less of a footprint on it than Xbox 360 users. Go figure that. And the article started off at the top of it with a 17-year-old kid's grab saying, but we're all going to die anyway. That's the spirit, isn't it?
They've all got their 100-inch plasma TVs hooked up to their
absolutely running, you know, 10 kilowatts of, and then they probably go to bed and leave it on, like most people that I know.
Well, I had a server at home, which I've had to turn off now, which took about 10% of the house power bill.
Yeah, no, they're pretty pretty good, aren't they, servers?
Is it water cooled?
It needed to be.
Did it run on LP gas?
No, not quite.
LP gas? What type of server have you got, Dr. Ron? Is this a Linux one?
I'm just waiting. It'd have to be, wouldn't it?
It was a Linux server, as it happens.
Yeah, yeah. See? See, that's one of the traps of Linux servers. You've got to run LPGuess. I never knew that. Stick with us.
Not true.
Okay.
I was wondering what JD would be running that would account for 10% of the domestic power consumption.
It was an enterprise-class server with a couple of RAID arrays hanging off it, so it chewed a fair bit of power. It had something like 20 hard drives in it or something. So
getting techie now. All right, let's continue on. The reason why I started speaking about that is high definition. You probably caught up with this recently, Dr. Ryan. HD DVDs no longer.
Blu-ray rocks.
Yeah, apparently.
You can buy HD really cheap, though, if you want to.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because you go to some of the websites around town at the moment, and they've still got Toshiba HD ads running on them, and billboards and things like that. So, I think we're driving down one of the, probably, you guys were talking about the Loop before, you come out of Melbourne's Loop, and there's a huge billboard as you see it, and it's all about HD DVD.
And a friend of mine imported from overseas, and he's just going mad now trying to collect all the titles he didn't have.
Is this because he wants to be a collector?
I think he's invested in the technology, sees that there's no point selling it, so he's just going to use it for the next 5 to 10 years until the next big thing comes out.
Some bright spark needs to get a Blu-ray to HD-DVD converter happening, or something along those lines. It could be quite lucrative, I would have thought, so...
Denial is not just the river in Egypt. Well, good luck to him. Hopefully he's not throwing good money after bad.
All right, but let's look at some of the peripherals now that we've got that we need to look at for Blu-ray, I guess. The PlayStation 3. Now, do these guys have HD or Blu-ray? Are these
kind of Blu-ray? Blu-ray, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Integrated.
Yeah. The PlayStation 3 is the Sony one, remember?
Yeah, so which one's the Xbox?
Is the Xbox Microsoft one, which used to have a HD DVD optional drive that you could get that Microsoft have now withdrawn.
Oh.
But apparently have they
withdrawn it, Graham?
Microsoft are no longer selling that. The Xbox 360 user I know has rushed out and bought one second hand, and is busily collecting
HD DVD.
cheap HD DVD titles that have been sold off around the place to get some use out of it. Yeah.
Controversy. Wow. Mm-hmm. I didn't know they dumped it. There you go.
So yes, there's probably, as you say, a few cheap HD DVD. Unless Toshiba recalled a lot of them. Were they the only manufacturer in Australia that had HD DVD things out at this stage? You could probably get independent drives for your computers, couldn't you, Grant? You know that?
I hadn't seen any. No, the...
Oh, maybe it wasn't all in vain then, if they got it out of the market that early.
Mm.
There was some, I think, news stories here where there were some 1,500 odd devices that Pioneer was owning up to having sold in Australia. So anyway, Blu-ray is the way to go. The format war is over, but customers still have a decision to make if they want to pair their Blu-ray player with their high-definition screens. Do they go for a dedicated player, a PC-based system, or a games console that also lets you watch movies? So there you go. A bit of a dilemma, really, isn't it?
The cheapest way to go at the moment is almost certainly getting a Sony PlayStation 3.
Yes, if you...
just on $1,000. Yeah, not only do you have a very, very good games console, you've also got the cheapest on the market Blu-ray display.
One of the guys in the office bought a Bravia Tele, which is one of the
Sony
models,
Bravia,
which just so happened to come with a free PlayStation.
Oh, wow, so how good's that?
As a result, they sold out very quickly.
Oh, yeah.
I think they're all on back order. I don't even think he's got his telly yet or anything like that. So,
did they throw in some high-def cables as well so they could hook it up using the HDMI interface?
Don't know. That's one of the sort of real perplexing questions, really, isn't it? Is how do you connect them all up? We probably should touch on that. It's funny, also on the website, one of the most searched items is always to do with plasma TVs or LCD TVs as well. There's obviously a lot of call for how it works, and the old things like the burn-ins and things like that, which, and pixelation. Well, you've got a funny pixel on yours. I don't even know whether that still happens these days or whether they've sort of cured that sort of technology. So
Mine seems to have settled down. I've got probably half a dozen. You can't see them unless you get very, very close to the screen.
Yeah. Well, that's
so
the thing.
Don't bother me.
Big telly, little pixels. It forces you to watch it a fair way back.
It does.
Except if your kids, they like watching it within 2 foot of them.
Oh, you just stick it up on the wall. They can't get too close to that.
It's probably a good investment. Yes, protecting your investment. Let's talk a little bit about the digital ideas, too, briefly, in an incentive that's trying to keep Australian technology in Australia, because what happens is someone comes up with a great idea and then heads off overseas, especially when it comes to digital programming and things like that. Intel, the ABC, teaming up together with a few others to basically try and keep these sort of projects here in Australia in an effort to promote innovation and keep Australian talent in the country. These guys have jointly launched a scheme to support the fledgling digital content developers, dubbed the AIMIA, Innovate program. The scheme is expected to help content developers in the creation, development and marketing of a range of digital ideas that could include blogs, e-businesses and digital TV programs. Because that's just it. People come up with these really great ideas and then Google comes along or one of the big companies and says, what a great idea, can we buy you?
Mm.
What do you say? It's a trick question, really, isn't it? Of course you do. And there was a couple of Australians have gone that way. I remember seeing a guy at Google who basically, a Sydney University guy actually, who came up with a really good way to change searching algorithms, and Google said, yeah, come over and work for us, and I haven't seen or heard since.
You liked the way, Google liked the way his mind ticked, and
hey,
angle that he was coming from with his new inventions.
Absolutely. If someone said, come and work for us, and it was an organisation like that, well, you sort of wouldn't have to think twice, really.
No.
They'd probably relocate and do all that sort of stuff. Anyway, so there's a bit of local gossip. Anyway, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan and Justin Dunlop here on the panel this evening. The webcam is running and you can email us at feedback@techtalkradio.com.au. We'll be back with more after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
There's more emails, people saying we need a real-time video stream, an audio stream.
Oh.
Give me a break.
Tech Talk Television is what people want.
Yeah, that was a thought, isn't it? Tech Talk Television. I have the domain registered anyway.
They won't want to see our ugly mugs, though, on
on Tech Talk Television.
People keep asking me, who is Dr. Ron anyway? Yeah, hiding well and truly behind microphones this evening. I haven't looked at the picture. Webcam still going? Yeah, look.
It was last time I looked.
Oh, good. Good. Oh, yeah, my elbow's gone now. It's a piece of white paper. Sorry about that. Oh, dear. All right, feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. You send us your emails. Everybody else is tonight, so we'll add them to the mix. And, yes, if you want, we've even got a text number, 0430-582-077, if you want to send us a SMS as well. That'd be a bit of fun, too. Okay, let's talk about mobile broadband, because that's fairly topical these days, not with the Telstra launch of their new advertising campaign promoting absolutely everything under the sun on your little small screen device. What does it say? It's so much entertainment makes Big Pond too big for TV. We'll talk about that shortly. If you haven't seen Yes, seen Yes, boys? No.
Obviously,
been watching television too much these days. Just launched recently.
I just skipped through the ads.
Yeah. Mm. They got your TiVo already, haven't you?
My media centre.
Your media centre?
And my trusting media player.
Yeah, I must admit. All right, let's move along before we incriminate ourselves.
What were you going to admit?
Nothing.
Okay.
Nothing. I just haven't been watching much commercial television of late. When do you get the time to watch television?
It'd be all right if there was something on commercial television worth watching. I'm starting to sound like Adam Turner now, aren't I?
You are. You are. Yes. Next you'll be buying a Mac.
Yeah, well, you know, stranger things have happened.
Next week I'll bring one in.
The man next to you will convince you somewhat to buy a Mac. Let's talk about Vodafone. People that sort of generally tend to sort of slip under the radar. Vodafone in Australia is probably, I don't know, you'd have to say relatively city-centric, but maybe they're going to change. They've picked Ericsson, the company that Mark used to work for its 3G network upgrade across rural and regional Australia with future upgrades that could take the network to 28.8 megabits per second already on the cards. Now, what's Telstra up to? They skipped 7, they've gone to 14.4, I think, at the moment on their next G. And, of course, double that and 28.8 is the possibilities for it. So, I'm sure Seoul won't want to be beaten to the punch. So anyway, we'll see what happens.
Not to be outdone.
But Ericsson will supply Vodafone for the hardware and software necessary to upgrade the mobile operator's 900 meg and 2100 meg networks to deliver 14.4 meg, which is the theoretical download speed. Users will be unable to access speeds as high as that, however, due to limited capabilities of handsets and mobile data cards currently in the market. Yes, 7.2 I think is about the fastest you can get in a data card at the moment, even the Telstra Turbo card, which is good value for money. Now, if anyone's looking to buy one of those things, buy one outright. Don't go and put it on a plan, I reckon, because Telstra has the best network, as Graham would certainly testify to when it comes to mobile
in terms of
technology.
In terms of reach and in terms of capability today,
yes. Yeah. If you do need to zip down to out of a city-centric provider's area, you will pay through the nose if you roam. Mm. So it pays to buy a card
and be able to put it on the right network.
Swap your SIM when you need to.
Put it on one network when you're in the city and perhaps use the next G only when you need it out in the country.
Exactly, exactly.
What the reach is this Vodafone network going to have? Is they going to have lots of country...
I'm not sure.
Here we go, 95% of areas where Australians live and work. That could mean anything.
It could, and it's very much open to a challenge in a court hearing somewhere down the track too. So that's what happened with Telstra.
Yes, Telstra's, yes, everywhere you need it, yes.
So while Vodafone will be talking to users to, taking users to 7.2 meg for the first time, rival operator Telstra is already eyeing much greater speeds. Last month, CEO Sol Trujillo confirmed that NextG was to 21 megabits per second and 42 megabits per second in 2009. There you go, you heard it.
So
42 megs. Depends on what you can get the other end. But once again, everyone, you have to be wary that is the maximum download speed, and you will get much, much less.
And in a lot of cases, you only get that total for the whole cell. So, you know, if it does 14.4 megabits per second, that's total for everybody using the same cell you are.
Yes, and I think data is pushed down, I think, from recollection from what Mark was saying, the pecking order. Voice always takes priority.
Yep. So if there's lots and lots of voice calls as well, then your data's going to be even slower again. But this is really good. If it does compete with NextG in a lot of places, even if it's not got as much reach, which it probably won't have, that should help to drive the price of mobile broadband down a little bit, which will benefit everybody.
Mm. There are deals around at the moment, $14.95 for 2 years of mobile broadband. Not a bad deal, but 2 years is a very long time in radio technology and data and mobile broadband.
Yeah, I don't think I'd be signing up for a 2-year plan for that sort of stuff.
No, it'd be throw away.
Even in 1 year, the landscape's going to be, as we see with deals like this coming out, landscape's going to be totally different.
Absolutely, absolutely. Let's talk about Unbundled Local Loop just for a moment, because we can. And the reason why I want to talk about it is Naked DSL seems to be getting a good foothold here in Australia.
Okay, so Unbundled Local Loop
What is Unbundled Local Loop?
It's what Telstra call the service where you sell a phone line with no services on it.
Yeah, the High Court said $3.20 a month.
So you, as another provider, you can get access to a phone line that hasn't got a phone number on it. It's just
it means you don't pay double whack rental to Telstra for having your broadband. That's what you've always said.
You don't
said.
Have to have a phone line to have a phone service on your telephone line.
Yeah, no dial tone.
Yeah.
Dr. Ron, you've always been a fan of this. You've always wanted to move away from a certain provider. Now you can.
It's about time.
But there is a catch, and the catch is that the company that you choose to go with needs to have their own equipment in a telephone exchange near you.
Yes.
And normally it has to be on ADSL 2+, the new generation ADSL technology, to actually facilitate that. Now, in metro areas, there's a few, in fact, I'd say nearly all exchanges are, if they're not capable of right now, then they soon will be, of the Naked DSL. But what it means is, let's say you had, before Naked DSL, you paid on an $80 a month internet package. Your chances are $30 of that goes to Telstra for line rental or whatever it is like that, leaving you really to pay $50. And you've already paid your line rental in the form of the dial tone that you've got on your line. So theoretically, that extra bit that the ISPs are having to give Telstra will now pop down to something like $2.30 or $3.20, whatever it was that the ACCC ruled the other day, and things will become a little bit more cost-effective for ADSL and internet users.
If you don't need a phone line as well.
Yeah. Now, I still haven't quite worked out the pros and cons of that because, well, I guess one of the major ones that slaps everyone in the face is that mobiles are it. Everyone's got a mobile. And
everybody's got a cap on their mobile plan these days.
Who rings a landline these days, apart from a business?
Yeah. It's
rude, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just not worth the effort of going and finding where the phone is when you've got your mobile in your pocket. Yeah.
I must look at doing this. I've got two telephone services at home, and at least one of them we make no outgoing calls on. No one ever rings us on it. In fact, it's not even connected to consumer telephone equipment. It goes straight into an ADSL router. So if someone did ring the phone number that's attached to it, I wouldn't know about it. No, which is just as well, because I give that number out quite a lot when people want telemarketers. That's the idea. But in reality, there's no need for me to have a telephone service on that physical phone line. It's not what it's there for, from my point of view.
Oh, well, so there's a lot of options open to the consumer these days, and I guess that's what we're doing tonight, just making you aware of it. The other thing, too, is if you don't live in an area where you would have reliable mobiles, or you've probably got a health condition, you probably do need that fixed line. There's nothing like a fixed line when it comes to making a call when you need to.
Yeah, and it's those extraordinary situations where it might just be handy to have a phone line around. You know, you've got an emergency, something's gone wrong, your mobile phone doesn't work, or the battery's flat, or like the other day, the internet went off the ADSL, stopped working, and I went back. I've still got my old dial-up account, which I keep alive for...
Did it hurt you too, did it? Did you cop it?
Well, no, not on that occasion, but I've done it on other times recently when I've had problems on my ADSL service, and yeah, I've got the old dial-up I can fall back on. It's too slow for me these days to use in practice, but it's fast enough to get on the provider's website, or to send an email that might be urgent for work, or to look at Whirlpool to see if anyone else is having the same problem.
It's actually one of the things I've always wondered about. When your service provider has an outage, you can always get on and check their webpage. Like, how does that work?
Yeah.
Why are they still on? What are they doing? What do they know that we don't know?
Because you're not connecting to the internet, are you? When you're doing that, you're connecting to the directly
private
network that exists between you and your ISP.
It just doesn't seem fair, does it?
Quite.
All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan and Justin Dunlop here. We're all on the webcam tonight. You can have a look at us there. Visit the Tech Talk Radio website.
Hello.
Yeah, that's Graham behind there. All right, let's just have a bit of a chat about Patch Tuesday, Graham. This is one of your specialities. But
another one.
Coming up, Microsoft prepares 4 Office patches for this next... Is it this Tuesday?
Yeah, it's tomorrow. Yep.
That's probably yesterday or the day before, depending upon where you're listening to us on in the countryside at the moment. It's Monday night as we go to air.
Tuesday the 11th of March.
That's it.
Yeah, so on about Wednesday afternoon or Wednesday night, you might notice that you've got the updates on your machine.
I've always liked the sort of message you get when you turn on in the morning, especially a server when you take it out of the screensaver mode and says, your computer has been restarted to apply critical patches.
Yes.
Thanks, Microsoft.
Yeah, and I hate it when you've left your computer on for a reason. It's doing something for you. And you wake up in the morning and you find it's rebooted and it isn't doing what you thought it was doing. It's just sitting there.
Yeah, and you've lost a day.
Yeah.
Yeah. but Microsoft is planning at least 4 security patches this week in its Patch Tuesday release. The security updates will address 4 vulnerabilities, all of which have been given Microsoft's highest alert, DEFCON 5.
Yeah.
So
it is worth making sure that you do these ones.
Yes, the 4 security bulletins address vulnerabilities in Microsoft Office. While Microsoft did not specify the vulnerabilities, which is probably just as well, it really means Office 2000, 2002, 2003, and 2007, which is all of them, all the Office suites, are amongst the versions receiving the critical fix. Mac users will also receive a security update this month. They're going to try and have a go at you, Mac users, maybe. They'll load iTunes on there for you.
is this the Office version for the Mac?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Microsoft plans an issue to update 2004, 2008 versions of Office Mac as well. So, obviously something fairly in the core structure of their operating system. So that's Patch Tuesday, so make sure you leave your computers on or do the updates Tuesday morning, Wednesday, whenever it is that they come out.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, be late Wednesday our time, yeah.
All right. Now, just Microsoft and Yahoo. Remember that thing? It's all sort of
Microhoo.
That's it.
Yes.
All sort of disappeared under the radar in a lot of respects, hasn't it?
Well, Yahoo said close but no cigar. Not enough.
Yeah. And Microsoft said we're going to take on the board.
Yeah, that's right. They were going to sell shares and buy them all.
They were going to, try and launch a campaign to get the right people on the Yahoo board. But go on.
And Microsoft's share price went...
Did bang, I wasn't watching the stocks? Crash. Is that what happened, was it?
Mm.
Okay. Where did you find the time to do that?
Don't you worry about that.
Can't find the time to come in here, but you can watch the US stock market.
That's how it works. Put my finger on the pulse.
Oh, yeah, good.
Yeah.
All right. A successful Microsoft bid for Yahoo could slow the growth of their common rival Google in Asia, where the world's biggest search engine still lags the local players. For Microsoft, whose MSN portal has been struggling to gain share in Asia, the deal worth around US$41 billion would open up opportunities to cooperate with top Chinese e-commerce firm Alibaba.com. That'd be Arabian with a name like that.
Sounds like it.
And Japan's top search engine, Yahoo Japan. Yahoo and Microsoft are at the standoff offer after Yahoo's board rejected Microsoft's unsolicited offer of $31 for their cash for their shares.
Mm.
So there you go. That's what they did. Would you, I don't know, what do you think about, because we haven't spoken to you about this, Dr. Ron, Microhoo, what do you think?
Microhoo.
Yeah.
Micro Yahoo.
Stand half a chance?
I think, I don't know. I really don't know. Yahoo has probably seen the writing on the wall. They've been under the pump, haven't they, the last few years? The Google juggernaut.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're looking to be bailed out. I don't know. Microsoft taking on too much. Should they just stick to
good
doing
question.
What they do, just stick to making operating systems, which they do a good job of and they have done for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And this the whole online stuff, maybe, leave it to the professionals.
Yeah, maybe so. I actually had a chat to Microsoft during the course of the week. I went and had a visit and talked all about Server 2008, which we're going to bring an interview next week to Tech Talk Radio. It's been sort of released with all forms of accolades.
And you went to the launch?
Yeah, here in Melbourne. And, a lot of people are singing its praises. It's a fairly lightweight engine. You only load up what you want. Now, if anyone who's interested in server technology, when you load up 2003 server, which was their previous model, it loaded a lot of stuff up and it was fairly heavy when it came to loading things up. This baby is very quick to install and it does a lot of pretty easy things straight out of the box. They've also got some fairly nice features, virtualization, which a lot of people are still a bit sceptical about, but it just means instead of loading up Word or Office on your local client machine, you now just run it off the server.
Who would use this? An organization of 100 people? Or?
Good question.
Just me by myself in my office?
It's probably an SME-type organisation, small to medium enterprise, where they want to buy, you know, 5 seats of office. They might have 15 people working, but they've only got 5 seats. It means that they don't have to put it on 15 laptops.
There's applications for virtualisation at all levels. There really are. It's really a fascinating area.
Are you hearing much about it in your field at the moment? Is it
starting
people talking about it?
Yeah, starting to. There's lots of... You start to hear more about applications and ways people are using it. You start to see how it can apply, and I'm starting to see how it could be used in some of the small businesses that I deal with. Things like in the old days, one of the things that's a bad idea is to run your terminal services server on the same box as your Active Directory and all that stuff for security reasons. But you know, these days, what you could do, you buy one big server with a lot of memory in it, and instead of running on separate physical machines, just run them on separate virtual machines. So you've got a virtual machine that runs Server 2008. You've got a host machine that runs Server 2008, and you've got a virtual machine that runs your terminal server that's got your application in it, you're serving out to your clients. You've got another one that runs your Exchange server and another virtual server that runs your Active Directory. And then as your business grows, you can then just pick up one of those virtual servers, buy new hardware, and move it to another physical machine as you start to grow and get bigger.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
One of the things which interested me about 2008 is PHP is now part of the fundamental IIS web serving technology.
Well, they could hardly get away without doing that.
Which, according to the people I was speaking to the other day, actually runs about 50 times faster now that it's part of the IIS.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, we'll talk about that next week. When we have a chat to Microsoft.
And can't wait to hear all about it.
The beginning of the end of ASP. Mm. Well, they're going to migrate towards using... We're talking about web development languages here, and there's an open source version which is called PHP, and there's a Microsoft proprietary version called ASP, Active Server Pages.
When you have intelligence at the web server part of it, happening at the web server.
ASP.NET and all that is still well and truly supported in the new versions of server.
It's not going to go away quickly.
No, not going anywhere fast. So PHP, and even as a, you know, I've always found that you just choose the right language. Like you choose the right tool. You choose a Mac or a PC based on what you want to do. You choose the right language, whether what you want to try and achieve in a web process. Anyway, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're going to come back with the Oddspot Gadget and Website of the Week after this.
You're listening,
Dr. Ron?
Here I am listening.
Residual power. And I've got some residual power.
You can't enough CDMA.
In terms of the volume,
over a sensitive fingerprints. Now,
we may have digressed.
Talk radio.
Bill Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600
don't open hands, but it's good that you're not expecting, even if they do a thing.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my own.
British Through Vision Company releasing their T5000 camera at the British Home Office on March 12th to the 13th.
Just another camera?
Using passive imaging technology, it can identify objects by natural electromagnetic rays known as terahertz or T-rays. That means that it can detect weapons, drugs and explosives hidden under your clothes from up to 25 metres away.
Is that all?
Pretty much.
So this camera can see under your clothes?
Can see under your clothes. It won't see your skin necessarily because it's all emitting the same type of radiation being biological.
Yeah. Right.
But it can tell the difference apparently between clay and cocaine. If you have it in a package in your pocket, it can tell if you've got a gun because of the different magnetic rays coming out of, or passive rays coming out of the metal. Very interesting. If you go to look at their website, which is www.throughvision, that's T-H-R-U vision, Tech.com. It's down at the moment because I think a few people are having a look. But by tomorrow, it'll probably be back up again.
So just let me get this right. It's like a radar, you know, like what you put your baggies through the airport, yet it looks at human beings for contraband and stuff like that as you go
through.
Yeah. That's pretty good technology.
Except you don't have to walk through anything specific. It's just a camera. You can point it at people, and so you don't have to stop them and you don't have to have a box around them.
Great for night clothes.
Yeah.
And so what the pundits are saying is, well, get rid of your CCTVs, install these throughout London or Melbourne.
All right. What was the website again, JD?
www.throughvision.com. That's Throughvision, T-H-R-U, Vision.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
I have a website here which basically Lydia Davis, this is nepotism at its best, has written, and I thought it was absolutely fantastic, Lyd, so I thought, let's give it a bit of a go as the Tech Talk Radio website of the week. Now, if you go to Lyd's web blog, which is called blogwell.com, http://blogwell.com, you'll see, obviously, an interview there recently that she did with our social media guru, Salim, the other day.
That was the one last week.
That's right.
Good interview. Very good.
But scroll down a little bit. You can't miss it. There's a shot of Lyd there with a red T-shirt on that says, Talk Nerdy to Me. But, no, actually, it's not her, but... There you go, Lyd. If you scroll down there, if you're a web developer, and there's all sorts of things out there which are, you know, set to trick you up when it comes to web development, she's put 100 tips together there, which I thought were fantastic, helping you get through a lot of the resources, really, to make your life as a web developer a little bit easier. And even if you're not a web developer, there's some good descriptions. You know, everyone's probably heard of Ajax code and DHTML and all those sort of little things. Very well worth while going to have a bit of a listen and see what you can find, because it'll put things into plain speak for you, which is sort of a bit like what our show's all about.
She's put a lot of hard work into that website.
Absolutely. Don't know who the guy is with his V-fingers there, but nonetheless, yes, that's the Tech Talk Radio nepotistic website of the week, which is http://blog-well.com, and it's by Lydia here on the Tech Talk Radio panel.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
And this week's Odd Spot comes from Britain, where a poll has revealed that over three quarters of British drivers are unable to identify a motorway symbol on a map, and only 1% would pass the map reading badge test for the Cub Scouts.
What?
So because of the prevalence of SatNav and related technologies in this part of the world, that people have forgotten how to read paper maps.
Well, that doesn't surprise me, really.
England was the same country where those people were driving off through closed bridges and driving into rivers and things because they were listening to their
SatNav. And, people in Melbourne drove onto a road that isn't built yet because their SatNav told them to as well. Yeah. People, if you're using the SatNav, you have to use your brain as well, okay? Don't drive through the big gate that's a construction site. Don't turn onto the train tracks. Don't turn down a dirt road in a blizzard.
Avoid Eastlink, it's not open yet.
It's not going to work for you.
Yeah, that's a good point. Don't go down Eastlink.
16% of British drivers have become so heavily reliant on sat-nav systems, they have given up on keeping a map in their car, so when their battery goes flat, they can't get where they're going. They estimate that it's resulted in 36 billion miles, that's 58 billion kilometres extra, being driven every year because people get lost.
Fantastic.
Because of sat-nav.
Because they don't know how to read maps anymore.
Good on them.
Got one in your car yet, Dr. Ron?
No.
Can't let your battery go flat.
I've got no need for one.
Or just remember how to read a map.
Mm.
Yeah, we have good street directories.
Grab the street directory. Yes.
That's it.
Yeah, see, then you'll need your Google device very shortly, and then when Google's down and you can't get onto Google Maps or something, you're going to be shot there as well, aren't you?
You're still...
Buy a map.
Yes.
except that there's the RACV technology now telling you where all the road blockages are, so...
How's that work?
I don't know, I haven't actually used it yet, but I've heard reports that it's in testing, and so you can log on, put in your route, and it'll tell you not to take the Eastern Freeway because it's full of traffic, go the other way.
Fantastic. Well, that's a foregone conclusion, really. Yes.
There's no technology involved in that one.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan, and Justin Dunlop in the studio tonight. Thank you one and all for coming in. It's nice to see you again, Dr. Ron,
thank
too.
You very
it's
much.
Been absolutely wonderful.
Great to be. I'll do this more often.
Are you coming in next week, or is it too close to call yet?
Next week will be good, the week after will be good, and I'll probably predict 3 weeks into the future, pretty good chance as well.
Fantastic. All right, thanks, guys. we'll be back next week with Microsoft Server 2008. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron Hamless, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC and 3XX in Melbourne, Cairns FM, Switch 1197 in Brisbane, 95.3 Huon FM in Tasmania, Queer FM in WA, and Stop and Go Radio in the United States. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.